Again, my name is Julia Przedworski, but feel free to call me Jules. I am a PhD student at the University of Minnesota School of Public Health, but beforehand I lived for a number of years in Boston, so it's great to be back to present the results of some of my research. So, for some background, and I'm guessing this won't be news to a lot of you, we know that sexual minority women face numerous health disparities compared to sexual and non-minority women. This includes poor physical and mental health outcomes, greater barriers to accessing and utilizing health care, and greater substance use. We also know that sexual orientation is a complex construct. And with all research where we try to fit individuals into a small number of predetermined boxes, this results in some issues. For one, measures of sexual orientation are not standardized. A recent review of 201 articles on the health of sexual minority women found that sexual orientation was operationalized in 100 different ways. Now, a major source of this divergence in operationalization stems from the multidimensionality of sexual orientation. Now, sexual orientation is most commonly conceptualized as comprised of three separable dimensions: sexual identity, sexual behavior, and sexual attraction. Now, importantly, these three dimensions do not always align in a predictable manner. So, for instance, a seminal study by Lauman et al. From the mid-90s found that only 15% of sexual minority women and 24% of sexual minority men reported overlap in all three dimensions. So that means that only 15% of sexual minority women would occupy the center portion of that fabulous Venn diagram that I myself designed. Another more recent study found that 64%, or nearly two-thirds, of women who had sex with women self-identified as straight. Now, the implications of this are sort of unclear for public health. For one, dimensions of sexual orientations may not be cannot be used interchangeably in many cases. It's also unclear how individuals for whom their sexual orientation does not align according to socially constructed definitions, or what some folks have referred to as folks who have who are sexual orientation discordant, we don't know whether their health needs and life experiences differ. Now, a majority of health studies rely on a single measure of sexual orientation, most commonly sexual identity or sexual behavior. And often it is both theoretically and empirically appropriate to choose one measure over another. In other cases, the choice of the sexual orientation measure is limited by the availability or lack thereof of data, and this is particularly the case for those of us who conduct secondary analyses of the large national survey data sets. There has been growing attention being paid to the usefulness and applicability of using two dimensions of sexual orientation simultaneously in order to gain a greater insight into the population-level health of sexual minority women. This brings me to our objective. So we set out to examine the health of sexual minority and compared to sexual non-minority women using both sexual identity and sexual behavior measures. We wanted to conduct a secondary analysis of a large national survey to examine self-rated health, substance use, and healthcare access. Now, the data source that we chose to do this is the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, henceforth known as NHANES. It is a continuously administered cross-sectional survey that annually surveys approximately 5,000 adults and children. In order to obtain a large enough sample size of sexual minority women, we pooled data across 10 years, and our study population were women ages 20 to 59 for whom sexual identity and sexual behavior data were available. Now, we considered three separate independent variables. One was a standalone sexual behavior independent variable, where we categorized women based on whether they reported having had sex with at least one woman during their lifetime. The second independent variable was sexual identity, where we categorized women depending on how they self-identified, either as lesbian, bisexual, or straight. And then our third independent variable used both sexual identity and sexual behavior measures to categorize women into one of six groups: lesbian, bisexual, or straight women who had sex with women, and lesbian, bisexual, and straight women who did not have sex with women. Now, unfortunately, due to small sample sizes, we had to exclude lesbian and bisexual women who reported not having had sex with women. So the health measures that we looked at, we looked at healthcare access, where we were trying to capture some more structural determinants of health, and these included insurance coverage and having a source of routine care. We also looked at cigarette use and two measures of alcohol use in order to capture the more behavioral determinants of health, and then we also looked at self-rated general health. All of these were dichotomous measures. Then we then conducted three separate and parallel analyses that used the three independent variables, the sexual behavior only, sexual identity only, and the combined sexual identity and behavior variables. We estimated the relative risks of the dependent variables using generalized linear models, which we adjusted for a number of relevant covariates, including age, educational attainment, and survey year. And all our estimates also account for the complex sampling design of the NHANES survey. Okay, before I get into the results, I like getting the limitations out on the table. So you may be wondering why in all of my methods I don't talk about sexual attraction, the third dimension of sexual orientation, and it's because NHANES simply does not collect that data. We also had to exclude respondents who selected other or I don't know in response to the sexual identity question. We are not able to make any kind of causal inferences based on these data due to the cross-sectional design of the NHANES survey, so all of these results are going to be, of course, associations. And then in terms of the measures that we do use, the sexual behavior question is a lifetime measure, so we don't know when the reported sex with women happened. And the sexual identity question may have conflated sexual identity with sexual attraction. And the reason for this is that the question provides a parenthetical definition that includes the word attracted to in it. However, in cognitive testing of this question, it was unclear whether that would have resulted in any misclassification of women's sexual identity. Okay, results, fun stuff. So here we have the sexual orientation of the NHANES sample of women. And when we look at the sexual behavior of the sample, we see that almost 10% of the women in the sample reported having sex with at least one woman during their lifetime. When we look at sexual identity, we find that 1.5% of women self-identified as lesbian and 3.6% of women self-identified as bisexual, for a total of approximately 5%. So looking at these two numbers, sets of data alone, we can see that the sample of women who reported having sex with women is almost twice as large as the total number of women who self-identified as either lesbian or bisexual. Then when we cross-tabulate these data, we see that indeed, consistent with other studies, there are a number of women who some would classify as sexual orientation discordant. So here, this would be the lesbian and bisexual women. Almost 7% of lesbian women and almost 15% of bisexual women who report not having had sex with women, and the 5% of straight women who reported having sex with women. And also consistent with previous research, we find that over half of the women who report having sex with women self-identify as straight. To relate this back to the analysis, in analysis one, we're using only sexual behavior and comparing women who have sex with women to women who do not have sex with women. In analysis two, we look just at these three groups and compare lesbian and bisexual women to straight women. And in analysis three, we look at these four groups, and straight women who did not have sex with women are the reference. And again, we had to exclude two groups, lesbian and bisexual women who did not have sex with women due to sample size. So here we have the adjusted relative risks for the six outcomes. The three boxes correspond to the three analyses that we conducted with the different measures of sexual orientation. And there's a number of things that jumped out at us in these results that we found interesting. For one, only bisexual women reported having had a significantly greater risk of reporting poor self-rated health. I think I said that incorrectly, sorry. Then we also found that only lesbian women had a significantly greater risk of not having a source of routine care. A third thing that we thought was really interesting was that straight women who had sex with women came out as a sort of separate risk group, where they had a distinct, um, gr- a great, significantly greater risk of these three behavioral measures, the heavy alcohol use, binge drinking, and cigarette use. However, they did not differ from the reference group in terms of self-rated health, insurance coverage, or having a source of care. We also looked at the predicted probabilities of not having insurance, and for me it's a little easier to understand the implications of the findings by looking at probabilities. And looking at it now, in retrospect, I wish I had made this a rainbow color, because it would have been way cooler, but it is what it is. So here we see that if we look across the three sort of sets of graphs, again corresponding to the three analyses, we see that sexual minority identity seems to be the driver of uninsurance. So lesbian and bisexual women are more likely to be uninsured of sexual minority women. And this is unsurprising, given that women who self-identify as lesbian or bisexual are more likely to have same-sex partners and less likely to have access to employer-sponsored health insurance benefits. We think that if you notice also the effect size between the sexual behavior and sexual identity analysis, women who have sex with women do have significantly greater probability of being uninsured, but that effect size is smaller. And this is because that group includes a large number of women who self-identify as straight who do not have greater probability of being uninsured. So we're seeing a dilution of the effect size. When we look, on the other hand, at binge drinking, across the three analyses, we see actually that the choice of the sexual orientation measure in our studies can affect the conclusions that we would draw. So if we looked at just sexual behavior, we would see that there is a statistically significantly greater probability of binge drinking among women who have sex with women. But in the sexual identity only question, we do not see any statistically significant results. And from the combined analysis, we can see that the higher rates of binge drinking among sexual minority women may be driven by women who have sex with women who identify as either straight or bisexual. So going on to the conclusions, we found that lesbian and bisexual women have distinct health profiles, and this is consistent with significant literature out there. We found that bisexual women are more likely to report negative general health. We found lesbian women are less likely to have a source of routine care, and that these two groups of women should not be collapsed into a single category when possible. We also found that straight women who had sex with women were more likely to use cigarettes and alcohol, but they did not differ from straight women who did not have sex with women in terms of healthcare access. And notably, we would not have been able to examine this group had we not considered both sexual behavior and sexual identity to define them. Some final words. I have no idea how I'm doing on time. Okay, good. I went fast. Some final words. We found that sexual minority women face significant health disparities, as a number of other great studies have shown. We don't mean to imply in any way that sexual behavior or sexual identity per se are the causes of poor health outcomes. It is likely the structural, social, and interpersonal discrimination and stigma that sexual minority women must contend with as a marginalized social group. And finally, that we gained in our analysis and in the populational level study, we gained the most insight about the health of sexual minority women when we considered both sexual identity and sexual behavior simultaneously. A set of these results is currently in press in the American Journal of Public Health, so feel free to read that if you have more questions. And I also want to acknowledge financial support, both from National Cancer Institute and the Agency for Healthcare Quality and Research Training Grants. And with that, I'd like to thank you for your attention. I'm happy to take any questions, and here's my contact information. Thanks. Oh, I don't know. Okay, yes.
Thank you. I have a question, which is, when you say women have sex with women, do you mean lifetime?
Yes, this is a lifetime measure.
Okay.
I have that if you'd like to see it, absolutely. So here we have age. There were some differences, definitely. You know, some of the ones that you know, sexual minority women were more likely to be younger. There was not much statistically significant difference in terms of race. Obviously, in terms of relationship status, there were significant differences between sexual minority and non-minority women. And if you want any particular demographic table, please tell me to stop. And then sexual minority women, in particular bisexual women, and straight women who had sex with women were less likely to have a college degree, if I remember correctly, sorry about that. And then in terms of poverty, sexual minority women were more likely to be under the federal poverty line. Yes? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's it's sort of where the non-standardization of the measures, kind of where the, you know, rubber hits the road, in the sense that it's capturing probably the a similar or same group. There's a lot of overlap, and in that instance, it's being defined as in terms of almost like a spectrum of sexual identity versus a difference in dimension. I think we'd see a lot of similar results for that group as we saw for the straight women who reported having sex with women. I think one of the reasons why we did this study was sort of in response to a few articles that had problematized the use of sexual behavior only as a measure of sexual orientation versus some that have heavily relied on sexual identity for some health indicators where behavior may play a part as well. Yes? Probably not.
But that never feels safe to assume that.
Yeah.
I wonder.
None of the federal surveys is good to assume.
Sort of interact with some of these categories.
Yeah, I think it'd be really interesting. I mean, arguably, so the NHANES data set is interesting because at the same time they also collect a whole host of really biologically sort of based, you know, that there's pap smears and things like that. So I wonder if there would be a way to sort of tease out, you know, it may be possible to tease it out, but it would be very imprecise. But I think you're absolutely right that there is going to be sort of an interesting thing and interaction going with folks who are trans-identified.
And you have to wonder whether certain outcomes would be higher among the trans population than the cis-population.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I definitely wish we had large enough sample sizes and the information to begin with to look at it. I suspect, in a way, just as we saw some of the dilution of the effect size by including self-identified straight women in the WSW category, we may not see, you know, or the inclusion of trans women, for instance, may not affect the actual effect size. In this sample. Okay. Okay. Thank you.